Welcome to another edition of Once Upon an Island, Tales from Lopez. I'm Ali Smulders. I'm here with Janet Balser, and we are delighted to have Ron Norman here, and we will hope to hear some tales from him growing up on Lopez and making, well, I won't tell you what he did, but Janet, you want to start asking some questions?
Sure. So, Ron, you were just talking a little bit about when you were around 8 or 9, and we thought it might be fun to start the show by listening to what one of your hobbies were when you were an 8 or 9-year-old. Would you like to tell us maybe what you accumulated at that age?
I think we're probably 8 or 9 years old. We had my twin brother and I each had our own cars. And we would drive in the gravel pit across the road from where we lived on the south end at Islanddale. And we would, they were like go-karts nowadays, but we had real cars. And we would go around and around and around in circles till we ran out of gas. And then we would grab a gunny sack and start walking the roads to Richardson's store and picking up beer bottles. And we'd get enough money, and one of us would be packing a 5-gallon can so we could fill it with gasoline. We'd turn in the bottles, get the money. If we had enough left over, we'd buy some candy with it, and then we would walk back home. We could go around and around for a little while longer, you know, until we ran out of gas again.
And you were young, but you already knew how to be careful with gasoline? You didn't have problems with fires and stuff?
No, we didn't have any.
You learned responsibility very early.
We didn't start smoking until we were 17 or so.
No chance of fire that way.
That was safe.
So now, you were just saying, and I think it's a good thing for people of all ages to hear, how much did you get for each bottle that you would collect?
1 penny.
1 penny.
And for a stubby, and then we would get 2 cents for a quart.
Oh, I see. And then most kids go to the store when they're 8 or 9 to purchase candy. That's usually their goal, but you would only do that if you had an extra few pennies,
right? If we had extra money, we'd buy some candy, but mainly it was gasoline only.
And you found plenty of beer bottles because people were used to just tossing them out of the window.
Just throw them out the window.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there was a couple guys that lived on that route that drank heavily. And they actually supplied us with the beer bottles so we could get gasoline.
Do you think they ever saw you picking up the bottles?
Oh, sure.
So they even thought maybe, here's for Ron and Don, as they would throw the bottles out the window.
I think pop bottles were 2 cents a piece.
Ah, oh yeah.
And also.
That's good.
So if you found a pop bottle, it was really good.
Yeah. And so your parents, you and your parents lived now where Islanddale is.
Yes.
That was your land, your home. And that your father, what did he started?
Started a business there called Southside Welding and General Repair in 1948. It was the same year that my brother and I were born.
Mm-hmm.
We lived in a little small trailer, like a tow behind trailer. And then they added on to it. My dad's friends and him, the story goes, added on in like 2 days. Probably was a weekend.
Wow.
And so we'd have more room.
Mm-hmm. Did you mention the name of the business? Because, yeah, I really like that.
It's a good name.
Yeah, very good name.
And then through your dad, it sounds like that's how you... I mean, that was sounds like, and you could, I would love it if you told us more of, it sounds that what he did as a living for his welding, and that was kind of what you did for your spare time or your fun, your growing up and your exploration, your brothers and you?
Yeah, that was our hobby, our entertainment. We would chop up bicycles and make motor scooters out of them because, of course, pedaling, you know. We were into gasoline-driven things.
And did you mention how you got these cars and how much you paid for them?
Oh, we'd get cars. I bought a pickup one time from a guy for $1 that ran. And cars were pretty cheap. A lot of people would give you cars just to get rid of them, old cars.
And you would keep it running, so you would learn actually.
We would learn
by doing.
Learn by our mistakes.
Yeah. Wait a minute, something went wrong here. This was long before computers made it impossible for normal people to do anything about cars.
Well, there weren't any computer cars back then. Everything was point ignition and
you were
simple
born in
battery.
48, so we're talking here in the 50s, the later 50s.
Later 50s, yeah. And, it was a fun time.
Did you have many, like you, so your brother, your twin brother is Don, right?
My twin brother's Don.
Don.
My younger brother's John.
John. And did you have friends that would come over and partake in these types of things, or was it pretty much just you boys doing?
We had a couple friends that would come over once in a while, but it was generally just the three of us.
Uh-huh.
And mainly my twin brother and I usually built things together.
Mm-hmm. Because your other brother
never
was five
for,
years.
Never worked on a project per se for each other, but built things for ourselves, you know.
Together, to share.
We always had to have one of each.
Oh, you know? Oh, I see.
Like, he had to have a car, and I had to have a car, and then he had to have a motor scooter, and I had to have my own. We couldn't share one, you know.
Oh.
I think it was a twin thing.
Yeah. You share.
Trying
so
to gain recognition as an individual instead of two.
Right. Yeah. Very good. So you were going to school on School Road. And how did you get there?
School bus.
Oh, there was a school bus.
Yep, guy named Hod Kernut drove the school bus on the south end.
Hod Kernut?
Hod Kernut.
Hod Kernut. Oh.
And I remember as kids, we always would laugh to each other and aloud because the guy was a horrible driver. I mean, He wasn't just a horrible driver. He couldn't even shift. And it was, you know, a manual transmission, and he was grinding gears all the time and missing gears. And, of course, we'd already mastered that at 9 or 10 years old, you know, in the gravel pit, and we couldn't figure out how a guy that old could not drive and shift without grinding gears. And we'd start laughing so much, sometimes he'd stop the bus. And, you know,
because you were laughing so
because
hard.
Because we were laughing at him, and
oh,
he knew that,
he knew.
You know, he knew, and it was hilarious.
I was wondering whether it's loud.
I think it is. I think that's, we're just testing the loudness of this. I think that's as loud as I could get it. Here we go.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we rode the bus until, of course, we got our driver's license, and then we would drive our cars. Not just one car, but each one of us would have their own car.
Well, you would, and then would your brother John just hop in whoever car, or would he have his own car too?
No, he would sometimes ride with us, or he would ride the bus.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
No,
I'm not
was
so sure
John
my mother
also
even
into cars?
Oh, he got into cars later. but he got into the music thing before he got into the car thing.
Tell us about that.
Well, he started when the Beatles were popular, came to the U.S. That's all he could think of was being a Beatle. Mm. So he had the... There were these friends of ours that had a couple of... Let's see, one, two... They had three daughters. They were roughly my younger brother's age. They varied 2-3 years. Anyway, they actually had this little band that they would set up in the yard. And they would do Beatle music. They would sing, and my brother would play this homemade guitar, and they
so he
have
made
a great little time.
He made his own instruments?
Made his own instruments. He taught himself how to play the guitar, and he actually made his own clothes. He learned how to sew on a sewing machine, and Mom had an old Singer sewing machine, and he would get material, and he would make his own patterns and do his own shirts and pants. And
it's so
quite interesting.
He would make like costume kind of stuff,
sure,
like the Beatles would be wearing.
Yeah, he would make, you know, the big bell-bottom pants.
Mm-hmm.
He'd make the big, collared shirts, you know. And
were you, and you and your brother, did you dress at all like that?
No.
No, uh-uh. And did you find
we just weren't into it.
Yeah.
No.
But that's lovely that he was so much an individual person,
yeah,
that he did his
was.
Own thing.
It
you know?
Was great that he...
It's not easy when you have two older brothers who are twins.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's kind of big deal.
Yeah, I admire him. He's a genius.
And then you were saying about your dad's shop, that you guys would do something in it to get into your dad's shop?
Oh, there was this board on the back of the shop that...
Because he would
lock... He would lock the doors when he'd leave because he knew we were going to get in there. And so we found this short piece of... it was the old shop was made out of shiplap. It was a kind of a tongue and groove type lap wood, and find this piece about 2 feet long we got off, and we had worn it so much, every time he'd leave, we'd pull this board off, and we could just crawl through this hole. I remember it mustn't have been over 8 inches, but we were small anyway. We could get our head in there, we could get the body in, and we would, as soon as the truck would leave, and we could hear it going away, we would get in the shop and start working away.
Uh-huh.
We'd be cutting and welding, and then one of us would always be like on a lookout and listening for this truck to come back. It was an old Chevy, and it was loud, and anyway, we knew the sounds of all the cars, you know, so here
did
he would come. And
did you have time to clean up the shop
no,
again?
No, not very good.
Oh.
You know, anyway, I'm not sure we left our little signs everywhere, but we would hear him coming, and out through the door, we'd go out through the hole in the wall and back through with the nails, and the nails were almost like chrome because we would use the same nails, and we would just push them in the holes. We wouldn't have to pound them in.
And was your mom was probably always home.
She was home. She knew what was going on.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure she did. Yeah, but she didn't say anything.
Have you ever asked
Thank
your dad
God.
About that?
No.
You should.
I
that
should.
Would be funny to see. I'd be curious what his response was. If
he
knew.
He faithfully locked the door when he left, knowing fully well that the boys would be in there.
Coming in, yeah.
Yeah, later on, you know, I wondered if he was locking the thing to keep other people out, and he knew that we were in there already. I don't know. Kind of
well, you should ask him.
I should ask him.
Yeah,
yeah.
But that's where all the...
He can't punish you for it now.
That's where all the mechanical stuff started. Right there in that old shop.
And it sounds like it was quite a thing because all of the boys, you all experienced that.
Yeah, all of us did.
Yeah. So it was a positive thing in everyone's life, it sounded like. Yeah. Except for maybe your mom's.
Except for maybe mom, yeah.
So I was asking about your school days, and you said it was a small class of...
Nine people. In a graduating class.
And you remember some of the names of...
Yeah, Dolores Foss. Her name was Poston. She was in my class. Maribel Ritchie. Maribel Doss works at the clinic. Of course, my brother and myself. Lloyd Seeger, he was in the class. I really can't remember any of the other ones.
Mm-hmm. And you actually had a school bus taking you?
We had a school bus.
Tell us about that.
Well, the guy's name was Hod Kernut. Drove the bus on the south end. And I think we'd get on the bus about 8 in the morning. Seems to, I think it was about 8. Anyway, the guy was horrible. He wasn't as bad of a driver as he was a shifter. He just couldn't shift that bus. He would always grind gears and miss gears and that, and of course, Dick Jennison, he rode that South End bus, and we were good friends, and we would all start giggling when he would miss a gear or grind a gear, and so sometimes he'd get so mad he would just stop the bus in the middle of the road and
what are you guys talking
yell
about?
At us,
laughing.
And then we'd shut up for a little bit, and then he'd take off, and then he'd miss some more gears, and we'd start giggling again, and It was quite interesting.
Were there many kids that lived on the south end at that time, or were you kind of on your own out there, you and your brothers and Dick and a few others?
There were quite a few. Uh-huh. I don't exactly know how many.
Mm-hmm.
There were some that would come just from some other place for the school year, you know, and then leave again.
Mm-hmm.
It's always interesting to go back to school in the start of the season, see new faces, you know.
Yeah.
There weren't that many people that went to school there. I think there were 102 or 112 in the whole school.
Oh, like when first or kindergarten all the way through 12th?
First all the way through 12th,
mm-hmm.
When I went.
Yeah. I wonder how many there are now. My kids are in school. I should know that.
Well, at one point, there were like 300, but that's no more.
Yeah.
We're now back, I think, to about 200, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm.
Now, you were telling us also about being interested in talking with Willie Cousins.
Yeah, it started probably, I can remember back maybe when I was 5 years old.
5 years old?
Five or six, maybe. It was around 1953, 54, something like that. We would, it had to be 54. No, Iris Franklin had a brand new 55 Chevy station wagon. I remember that car. So
it was 55 then.
I always relate things with vehicles,
yeah.
You see.
Yeah.
So I know it was 55 because she had that car when we were started visiting. Anyway, we would, my mother and Iris Franklin were good friends, and so my mother would go up to visit her probably once a week, and she would always say, okay, now you stay away from Willie's house. And, of course, as soon as she got in the house, my brother and I would be over to Willie's, and we would ask him questions around the old kitchen.
Now, Willie lived, can you tell us where Willie lived?
Willie lived in the big yellow house that Robinson's own now.
And Cousins.
On Cousins Road.
Uh-huh.
And he was an amazing guy to listen to. We would just be fixed on him for, you know, it seemed like hours. He would tell us his stories, and he wore this old black suit with a white shirt and a top hat, and he had crippling arthritis, and he could barely move his head enough to look at you, and you had to listen really carefully because he talked real soft. He would tell us stories about when he was a young boy on Lopez. And
do you remember any of those stories?
Well, he talked about a smallpox epidemic here years and years ago, about how he was on a horseback one time. He was down by McKay Harbor, and all these posts were put in the ground along where the road is now. And they had skulls on the top of them, and they would ward off all the evil spirits. And he also talked about a big willow tree that sits by where Maggie Jennings lives now, at Barlow Bay there. And he said he came by one day, and there was two young Indians hung in the tree, in a willow tree. And they hung them there, same reasons, to ward off evil spirits.
Hmm.
It was an interesting story.
The story didn't tell how they died.
I assume they were from smallpox.
Oh, yeah, okay. Hmm.
And did Willie grow up here on Lopez?
As far as I know, he grew up most of his life here on Lopez.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Was he a farmer?
I think when I knew him as a small child, he had a garden. I know he had a large garden where the orchard is now.
Mm.
Those trees were really small at the time. He had a large garden there, but I don't know what else he did.
Mm-hmm.
When I knew him, he was so crippled that there was no way he could work. I know my dad told a story about him one time. Pierre Franklin, that lived in the house next door, J.P. Franklin's dad, had I thought it was an apple grinder, and you'd grind the apples, and then you'd put the apple pulp into a press and press apple cider. I remember Pierre was gone one time, and Willie decided he was going to press some apples into cider, and he dumped the gunny sack into the grinder, and it was an electric grinder, and it sucked the sack in and ground the sack all up, and I think it even burned up the motor on the grinder, but Pierre wasn't too happy about it.
Made a special
when
tasting.
He came home.
And you were saying that Uncle Phil was your uncle, is that
uncle
right?
Uncle Phil was my uncle.
Did you ever spend
Betty
much time?
Betty is my father's sister.
Oh, okay.
Betty is your father's sister.
Yep.
And did you ever spend much time with them as kids?
Yeah,
or?
We spent a lot more time probably with, we probably spent more time with Phil's mother and father.
And what were their names?
Oh.
Or their last name? Or
Haston, George, and Helen.
Oh, okay. And did they live?
They lived in the old farmhouse right there on the bottom of Pavey Hill.
Oh, where the old
across
schoolhouse?
Across from the old schoolhouse.
Oh, yeah.
And
across from the old schoolhouse. Okay, not the Olson's place, but the
George Haston, as far as I know, was the only guy that ever grew peanuts on Lopez.
peanuts.
When I was a kid, I asked him one time, I thought peanuts grew above the ground when I was a little kid, and he was digging in the dirt. Well, they were like potatoes. Anyway, he grew peanuts.
Did he grow a lot, or just a small?
It seemed like quite a few to me, but I'd never ever seen anybody else grow peanuts on Lopez. It was a real sandy loam soil. Anyway, they had berries there too. George and Helen had berries, and they sold them, and it was like a U-pick.
Yeah.
And I remember going down there. Boy, she had some good berries too.
Did she have blueberries or?
No, she had raspberries and strawberries.
Uh-huh.
I remember as a kid, we'd go down there, and well, one was for the box, and one was for the mouth. And
that's what U-pick is all about.
Yeah.
Yeah, except for the people who have the U-pick now. It's like, oh, hey, wait a minute.
We always loved going down there to eat dinner at George and Helen's. She made these homemade noodles. And we'd have chicken and dumplings and these huge rolled noodles.
Wow.
They were just really something special.
So would she roll the
noodles?
She
would roll the dough out. She would cut these noodles. And, yeah.
Wow.
She was a really good cook.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Great cook. That's what I remember about her.
Now, you went away from the island after you graduated from high school. Is that right?
Graduated from high school, went in the Navy. Went to boot camp, got out of boot camp, went straight to Vietnam. And we did I did two tours. I spent 3 years, 11 months, and 9 days. I got out and my twin brother re-enlisted for another 4 years.
Oh, he did?
6 years. 6 years.
6 years.
And then he got out of the service. Then I came back here, I went to work, got discharged, came back to Lopez and went to work for the place called Telephone Utilities out of Ilwaco, Washington. And I worked here for 2 or 3 years. Then I got a job offer in Aberdeen, Washington in a welding shop. It was a lot more money and so the woman that I was married to was from Alma. She lived in Alma, Washington, so of course her relatives were down in Grays Harbor, so we moved down there.
Mm-hmm. How old were you when you got married?
21.
Oh, yeah, you were young. Yeah.
And I worked down there for 2 or 3 years in that shop, and then I bought a log truck. And I did that for about, I was gone for about 13 years, and then I moved back here to Lopez.
And when you came back here, did you, you had told us before that you had purchased, when you came back from the Navy, you purchased a house right after that? Was that the
timing? I bought a house from a guy named Carter.
And so did you keep that house the whole time you were gone?
Kept the house about 2 years. I kept it about 2 years after I was living in Aberdeen and finally sold it to Martin's. As far as I know, they still own it.
I think they do. Connie Martin or White Bear's parents.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm.
I think they do also. And then when did you purchase the land that you live with now? Have you had that land a long time?
Well, when I came back to Lopez, I was single at that time because I had gotten a divorce. I bought a little place on the south end, a little couple lots from Theo Ritchie, and I built this brand new little house on it. And I'd planned on living there forever and ever and ever and never getting married again. And I went to work for Harold Klein at Sunset Builders in the barn. There was a repair shop in the barn. And then my current wife walked in one day. She was working up at Stephen Robleski's, falling some trees, and she was just, you know, it's that gasoline and that two-cycle engine oil smell, and she was dirty, and I go, oh, there's a woman that can work. And anyway, wasn't very long after that we got together, and the little house got sold. She owned 11 acres before I met her. And Jesse says, well, I think we should build a new house, a big house. And I thought for a minute, oh, well, yeah, sure. So I sold my property on the south end, and we drew up the plans, and we built it ourselves, and we built the house we live in now.
Yeah, it's a beautiful house. Wow.
So.
Now, I made some notes here when we talked earlier about what you guys did when you were young and living here. And it says groundhog prom. Now, tell us about that.
Oh, my little brother always was in the, played the music for the groundhog prom. That was a yearly thing that went on Lopez at the Legion Hall.
Not just for the young ones. It was
no,
for
it's for everybody.
Everybody.
But he did a Elvis Presley show down there, and he would dress the part and play all Elvis music. And I think Larry Cochran was involved in it also. I think he played in that band.
Probably. But he never named that name, that grand. Beautiful.
But
band.
It was a great happening.
And how many years do you think that happened? What is it?
No, I couldn't tell you. I'm thinking 5 or 6 probably years. Why it didn't keep going, I don't know.
But that was Legion Hall, which is now Woodman Hall.
Yeah, Woodman Hall.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when you were younger, were there lots of things that happened at the Legion Hall that you remember? Was that a top a place that people spent time?
There was a lot of there were a lot of dances at the Legion Hall, old time dances, and I remember going along as a little kid. My dad played in the band. He played saxophone, and they would bring us along, and we would sit, and they had
benches around.
Tip up chairs all the way around the dance floor, the hardwood floor. And then, of course, they played up on the stage. And so we would sit and, you know, we would get tired because we were so small. But we grew up with this dancing and this music. And I remember midnight was supper time, and it was always upstairs.
Oh.
There's a huge upstairs in that building, and people would bring food, sandwiches and food, and it was like all spread out on the big table, and we would get in a line and then go sit and eat, and then after that downstairs again.
But it was like at midnight?
Start up. Yep.
Wow.
Midnight.
Uh-huh.
And the band would start up maybe 11.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But that was a great time.
Well, you mentioned the wood floor. That wood floor is still in there, and that has been totally redone by Paul Berg, and it is absolutely beautiful.
It is.
Unbelievably beautiful.
Mm.
Yeah.
I remember.
It's a maple floor.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it's pretty.
I remember movies being shown down there when I was a little kid. There was a outside staircase that went up with a little teeny kickoff.
Little
and
lighthouse.
That's where the projector was. Mm-hmm. And if, I think you could probably look, you'd probably see where the projector came through the wall. Even now, if you walk in the main door in the back, look to the right.
Yeah.
Unless they've covered it over, I don't know.
I used to do plays in there with the high schoolers, and there was always that little, was it the light booth, that little kick out, or was
little
it
kick
a
out.
Tiny little thing you could
just
hardly see
the stage?
Just
before you go in the door, you'd go up
yeah.
the
yeah.
ladder
mm-hmm.
to the outside.
Yep.
You remember that?
Mm-hmm. And you could hardly see the stage to do any lighting from there because it was such a removed
uh-huh.
thing from the building.
I remember when I was a little kid there, after the Second World War, they had these little Japanese gas-powered race cars. They were maybe a foot long. And there was a bunch of guys had them. I think young Dick Pickering, Tommy Blake, maybe Harold Ogden. They would somehow fasten these cars to a tether string in the middle of that dance hall floor. And they'd have the doors open. These things ran on like two-cycle or methanol fuel. And they were loud, and they were noisy, and they would be going around and around and around in on this floor.
Wow.
And smoke would be flying out of the the doorways. And it was, I remember that.
So the adults, were they adults that had the...
Oh, they were adults.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And younger
uh-huh.
adults.
Yeah.
But I was looking at that floor, thinking it sure does look pretty. I remember black marks on it. Cars would be going around and around.
I'll never forget the first time I ever walked up the stairs, because by the time I moved here, it was closed down and no one could use it. And it's an amazing space up there. I don't think too many people have had the opportunity.
It's a little tiny, little kick off the side.
No, the second level.
Oh, yeah.
Of the Legion, or the Woodman Hall.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
And then the fire escape.
Yeah, that was always pretty exciting.
Yeah, well, that's what we did at break time.
So you could slide down the... Can you describe that for people who might not know?
Oh, there was a door up there. There was a door upstairs in the Legion Hall. There was a fire escape, and it was just a big sheet metal slide. And it was pretty ingenious when you think about it, for getting that, you know, there'd be probably a hundred people up there. You know, it was a great idea if there was a fire, and you'd just open this door, jump on this, in the chute, and right out onto the ground at the bottom. And we would open that door, and man, we would just wear it out, up and down, run back up, down the chute.
It'd be fun. I could see doing that.
It was a lot of fun. Kids had a great time on it.
We have been asked, you know, this is a little aside, but about Woodman Hall,
mm-hmm.
to interview people who have heard the ghosts in Woodman Hall. And there are quite a few people, even those who did not know anything about ghosts and who recently started working there and have found out about ghosts. So one of these days we will interview those who can tell us what the ghosts have been doing. I'm very curious. But I think you guys may have made the ghosts or something.
I used to work there in the nights. So that was kind of not a comfortable place for me.
Yeah. So are your parents still living on island, or did they
parents
move off?
Parents moved to, they live in Cedar Woolley right now.
And how old are
they? My dad is 84, my mother's 81.
And your father grew up here?
My father grew up here. He was born in Hildegard Goss's house.
And did your mom move here? Or?
My mother was born here. She was born on Lopez, I believe. also. Her mother died when she was 7, so she ended up cooking and cleaning and doing all her mom's work, you know, when she was real young.
What was her maiden name?
Shirley Forrest.
Forrest.
She started driving herself to school when she was 11 in an old car.
Well, no wonder why she and your dad got along so well, huh?
Anyway, I don't remember what kind of car it was. I should know, but I don't remember what it was.
At 11.
Yep, she was driving to school at 11. But yeah, she must have been tough, you know, being 7 years old and taking care of your dad. I mean, cooking. And I remember she told the story one time about him getting some asparagus, bringing it home, and she, of course, you know, at that age, what do you do with this? Other, you know, you boil it or what? And anyway, she cut all the tops off and threw them away and just cooked the bottom parts of the asparagus. And anyway, he wasn't all that happy about it, I guess.
So, did she have siblings or was she the only child?
She had a stepsister that's still alive in Arizona. But other than that, no.
So she was the one who really, after her mother died, took care of
her
dad.
She took care of her dad, yep. She basically took care of him till he died, and he was almost 90, I think.
So when you were growing up, was he living here, when your mother and father and your family lived here, was he on Lopez too?
He was here on Lopez. In fact, first time I remember him, he had the place at the lake where Dwight Lewis has cows now. There was a great big old building, or a big old house there, that Bob Adcock bought the place. And there was a great big old house there. That's where Grandpa Dan lived. And then he met Sadie Forrest. What's her name? She was a Wilson. And she lives where Steve Ruby lives now, up on Coffelt Drive, past Helen Costco's, the end of the lane there. Anyway, he married Sadie Coffelt, and she was a cook at the Iceberg Reef Net Gear. Quite a gardener, and she had a huge vegetable garden down on the bottom of the property. Anyway, we would ride with her sometimes to the reef net gear where she was cooking for the guys out there, and she had this little flagpole that she would run this little flag up when it was time for the guys to come in and eat. So they would always keep watch on this flag, and she was a heck of a good cook.
Many people were there working? Like, did she cook for?
Oh, there were probably 4 or 5 guys there at the reef net gear at Iceberg. But she had planted all this asparagus on the side of the road there in front of McKay Harbor Inn. And, of course, it wasn't her property, but, man, asparagus grows good in the sand down there, especially on the beach.
Does it still grow there? Do you know? It does, yeah.
Anyway, I remember her stopped the car, and she'd get out, and she'd have her little knife, and she would cut this asparagus off and throw it back in the car, and away we would go out to the reef net gear. Anyway,
beautiful.
Years and years later, I was, 25 years ago probably, I've been watching this asparagus, you know, since I was a little kid.
Yeah, I
thought. Asparagus is still there, so I jumped out of the car, and I'm harvesting some asparagus, and this guy met me from across the road, and no short terms, asked me what I was doing on his property, and I told him that I was picking asparagus, and he asked me again. I said, I'm picking asparagus, and he says, well, that's my asparagus, and I says, no, my grandmother planted it, and I'm having some of it.
Good for you.
That's a very
and it's still one. There. You can see it. It's right where all the kayaks are pulled up in front of McKay Harbor Inn.
Yep,
you'll
I know
it.
The area.
It's going to seed now.
Right, right. That's the asparagus your grandmother planted. That's
yep,
a great
story. Yep, and
that's
a long time ago because she had a 53. She had a 53 Dodge Fire Dome. Car, and I remember getting out of that car, big old maroon, shiny maroon car.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, been a long time ago.
Were there actually repair people for cars on Lopez, or did everybody do their own repair?
A lot of people worked on their own rigs, but
that was just came with it.
Some didn't, and there was weeks on the north end and my dad on the south end.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Your dad would do some.
It was always a, you know, kind of a, well, I'm a better mechanic than you are. Or,
oh,
you
with
know,
weeks,
went.
Yeah.
Was a, anyway, I think they were both just fine. I think they were great mechanics.
Now, lately, or for the last almost 20 years or so, you've been doing a lot of art. And you should tell us a bit about that, how that came about.
You know, I still own it, but I had a repair business up by the school. And it was quitting time one night, and I had just gotten this new rock drill. I'd never even seen one before. I heard about them, but I had this rock drill, and I was boring holes in this rock. It was laying next to the door there at the shop. And I bored a hole in it, and then I ended up, I had this piece of round mild steel shaft, and I was pretty soon on pounding steel into these holes. And God, I kept looking at it, and I go, oh, that looks like a duck. So I cut these web feet out of plate and welded it on and put a head on it. Then the head would turn so you could kind of change the attitude of this thing. And so I shut the shop down and I took it home, showed my wife. She thought it was the stupidest thing she'd ever seen. I think she liked it. She just thought it was kind of goofy. But anyway, that's kind of the start of the art. And then somebody came by and they said, boy, I sure would like to buy that duck.
Oh, because you, so, did you leave it out by your shop?
Yeah, and so I, then the word got around and I started making more of them, and I sold almost every duck I ever made. And then I started making some sheep, and I called them cows, but people thought they were sheep, so. Anyway, I made a lot of those. But then I just started into, I always liked fish, birds and fish. So I started cutting, drawing out, you know, soapstone and cutting out fish and birds. And it's kind of where it went from there. And I actually found out I could sell. I could have fun. I could actually make some money and do what I wanted to do, and people were thrilled to buy the stuff, and I was thrilled to make it. So I'm a horrible business person, though. I love to make it, but I don't know a damn thing about selling it,
mm-hmm,
or how to market it.
Yeah, I really enjoy your artwork. I see it around a lot because I work in the village, and it's beautiful. It's really, it was hanging all over the Bay Cafe last year, I think it was. I really enjoyed seen that around.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I had Actually, a funny story. I had a studio tour one year. I'm on it quite often, but I hadn't been for the last couple of years. And then this year, I opened up again. It's been a few years back. People came to the studio tour, and they were from Russia. Pulled in a beautiful, black, huge Mercedes. Biggest Mercedes I think I've ever seen. Beautiful car, beautiful upholstery, leather. They wanted to buy a sheep, a rock sheep. Well, I have the legs on them are sharp. They're round, the horns. And they had to have this sheep. And I said, well, are you going to send it home? Yeah, we'll ship it home. Real broken English. And I remember him handing me the money for the sheep, and he took that sheep and he threw it right in on the back seat of that Mercedes. And you can imagine what the feet and the horns were doing to that leather upholstery. Ugh. And I said, you just ruined your back seat. And he just looked at me like, so what?
Hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But I've got a rock sheep. In Russia. I've got some rock ducks in China, actually.
In China?
I got some in Greenland. I always wanted to get a globe, you know, and take these little colored pins and stick them in.
You should.
See where I've got my stuff. You know, it's fun.
A little flat map you put on your wall and just do that.
Yeah. It's fun.
That's pretty amazing.
I have a question for you. Did you make the geese outside of the Bay Cafe? Are those?
No, I didn't.
Yours are Westland. Are most of your things on a flatter level, or are they?
No, just
all the metals.
The
metal stuff in the village is mine.
Yeah.
Everything gets rusty.
And then the rock. So how does the rock? I guess I'm having a hard time imagining the rock with the metal. Is rock and metal?
Rock and metal.
Uh-huh.
Fun to work with. You got to find the right rock, though.
Yeah.
Lopez rock is a hard rock to drill. You'll get almost through it, and then it'll break.
Oh, I see.
So
do you use mostly Lopez rock?
I use a lot of Lopez rock, but the best rock is from Oregon.
From Oregon?
Oregon.
Do you go right on the coast. Here? You actually go and get some?
I've been known to go there and get some.
My dad does stuff like that.
Pack it up the beach.
Yeah.
With a backpack.
Oh, goodness. Wow.
I'm not sure that's the right thing to do.
Well, it's not like you can take too many rocks with you.
Gorgeous rocks. Gorgeous rocks.
And just think of what you do to it so that it will be there forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very special, too. Hmm. So do you feel that actually, now that you're in your 60s, that your art interests you more than welding and doing the nitty-gritty repair stuff that you used to do?
I think when I'm doing my art, I'm the happiest.
That's what I figured.
I go to a spot where I don't think of anything else. I'm just focused on what I'm doing.
And how do you get your ideas?
I've thought about them in my sleep, actually. I've woke up with an idea of what I needed to do and what it looked like before I even did it.
And you remember that. It's a dream.
Well, it's like a dream. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wake up and I go, oh, this is what I need to do today. Or I think I'll do this way, and I'll figure out how to do it.
Do you think, it sounds like I don't know much about, you haven't talked too much about your twin brother, Don, but like, sounds like John is a person who's expressed himself through, you know, costumes or now the flying and things, but
and music.
In music. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like your parents were really supportive in whatever you boys wanted to do? I mean, do you feel like that you were given a lot of freedom to
I think we had a lot of freedom to do what we wanted to do.
Now, do you see artistic?
Well, my dad, I think, was awful artistic. I've seen him do a lot of amazing things.
And he was a musician, too.
He was a musician.
Saxophone.
It all, you know, it all came together.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, my poor mom, she had to deal with all of it. All the grease and the...
Oh, she might not have minded as much as you think.
She may not have.
Especially you saying that she drove her own car at 11. It seems like she might have known what she was walking
I
into.
Think
eh?
Maybe she was the instigator of us boys.
Oh, you think so? With getting your own
driving
car?
And,
yeah.
Who knows? It could have been her that created the whole scenario.
Well, there was something to be said when you guys were in the gravel pit with your cars. She knew where you were.
Yeah. Oh, she knew where we were. She could hear us.
Yeah. And it got you out of maybe welding too much with fire and stuff like that.
Poor windows on the house, though. So much dust and dirt on them. I can imagine how she could ever keep them clean enough to see out of.
And a gravel pit is not exactly the... You know, dust-free area.
No.
And do you feel like that Lopez is the place that you will grow old, or do you have any?
Oh yeah, I feel like
this is your home.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is home. I mean, we both fly, so we don't have to be tied down to taking the ferry, unless it's like today when you can't see to fly.
Well, how is the flying when you cannot see? Or you can do it on instruments?
Well, the thing is, we don't go if it's not flyable, but we rarely go on the ferry anyway, so I mean, when we can fly, we can leave here, we can be in Costco spending money in 30 minutes. And we can come back and we can ask each other how long's the ferry line as we fly over the ferry landing. And it's great to be able to fly. I can't even imagine what it's going to be like not being able to fly. But worse, I can't imagine what it would be like not to be able to drive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That would be driving hard for you. Yeah. But sometimes we have to give up things we really valued as we get older.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Ron. This was fascinating.
You're welcome.
Yes,
thank
you.
To hear your stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope you have enjoyed listening to another edition of Once Upon an Island, Tales from Lopez. And this program was pre-recorded.